Hello, and welcome to the East Anglian Theatre Podcast. April Fools may be upon us, and despite me thinking myself funny, this podcast is no laughing matter, folks. I'm deadly serious in my endeavours to promote theatre in this wonderful region, even the crap stuff with me in it. But what kind of intro is that? Hey everyone, my name is Ray Tempesta, and I am the class clown in these regular lessons all about the goings-on at theatre across East Anglia. Now, if you've not tuned in before, well, how on earth did you achieve a sense of fulfilment before now? Well, you're here now, that's all that matters, so here's how it works. I start by giving you the lowdown on what I've been up to in the world of theatre lately. That usually takes 2 or 3 minutes, which is worth noting if you want to hear the podcast but don't really care about my artistic endeavours. Don't worry, I've got thick skin, I can take it. Once you turn the sound back on, you'll come across the main feature, which is where I interview a guest or guests, usually about their company or upcoming production. And if you're still here when that's all over, you'll be treated to more of my promo voice as I tell you what else is happening across theatres in our region over the next few weeks. That's all coming up, of course, but first, let me tell you how you can support the podcast outside of listening to it. The East Anglian Theatre Podcast has a social media presence, and in the words of my daughter, a cringy TikTok account, which you can, of course, like, share, comment, whatever, to your heart's content. There's also a website, eatpod.co.uk. That's eatpod.co.uk. Here you'll find all previous episodes of the podcast, plus the reviews that I produce from time to time. You can also use the website to contact me if you want a shout out on an episode, or even if you'd like to ruin an evening by speaking to me as a guest on here. Anyway, now that's taken care of, let's ask the question that no one wants to know the answer to. Ray, what have you been up to in the world of theatre lately? Well, my inner monologue, I'm glad you're taking interest because I've got a bit to get off my chest. Firstly, the production of Hobson's Choice that I was involved in came to an end. Up to now, I've been quietly doing my bit to promote the production on here, but I'm nothing if not honest, and I have to tell you, I really wasn't that enthusiastic about it a few weeks back, as the show wasn't in the best of shape. Sure, the cast was led by the very experienced and thoroughly excellent Peter Howell in the role of Hobson, but to be honest, we were a bit thin on the ground for experience when it came to a number of the cast members, and given these were people I hadn't worked with before, I couldn't have that confidence that all was going to come good. For instance, there was Hannah Smith, who played the eldest daughter, Maggie, and probably all told had the biggest role. Now, she was fantastic, don't get me wrong, but it took her a bit longer to come off the book than others, and understandably, of course, but having not worked with her before, I couldn't help but feel a little bit unnerved by this. And the situation wasn't helped also when an actor playing her sister dropped out with only a couple of weeks to go, so rather than us being able to focus on driving the pace of the piece forward in the last couple of weeks, we were instead focusing on blocking for a new member of cast, which was frustrating to say the least. The same applied with Pete Dewar, who played Willie Mossop. Having never come across him before, I wasn't able to feel that confidence in him that he'd come good in the end. Now, he did, I might add, and did a fine job too, but that's, I guess, one of the perils of being a tart and switching companies constantly. You don't know how people are, how they read their parts, how long it takes them to learn, etc. I also have to admit that I wasn't in love with the play. Although it's well thought of, I hadn't come across Hobson's Choice before. I believe they'd also struggled to cast the production, typically because they didn't have enough men, so I was asked whether I'd play a part in this. Now, flattery got the better of me, and I said yes. In truth, though, had I auditioned, I probably wouldn't have gone for the part that I ended up playing in Albert Prosser, as I was slightly too old, sad as that is to admit. I also felt a bit isolated from the rest of my castmates in the early days. Now, that wasn't their fault. I was the outsider, having never met any of them before, and my only real link to the group was the assistant director, who wasn't around much in the early stages. And I missed the first few rehearsals due to still being involved in Yippie-Ki-Yay, which didn't help. Now, I might seem confident on here, and I am on stage, of course, but off it, I'm really not. And I'll open myself up to you, dear listeners. I struggle to form any meaningful bonds with people. So unfortunately, I didn't go out of my way to make introductions or start conversations. I was just getting through my lines and leaving as quickly as I could, probably taking myself a little bit too seriously and not giving the greatest of impressions. But in the last few weeks, once I got over myself and started to try and have fun again, I found I got to know the team a bit better and I let my personality shine. And of course, your enthusiasm also naturally gets a lift when you start rehearsing in costume too and in the venue you'll actually be on stage at. And as much as I moaned about the scene changes, it felt great to be part of a team responsible for lugging the set about, and it kept me engaged all the way through the shows. On stage, I had a blast, as I always do, and even felt a hint of what I thought might have been nerves going into the final performance. Turns out it wasn't nerves, it was just a sadness in the pit of my stomach that at my involvement coming to an end. I'd enjoyed being a figure of fun as Hannah's character bullied me into buying a pair of boots. I'd enjoyed awkwardly grinning at my onstage partner Annabelle, never quite sure if we were doing it at the right moment. I'd enjoyed my verbal sparring with Peter's formidable character, and for the first time in a while, I was sad when a show came to an end. And that's not because I hadn't enjoyed other shows that I've done recently, of course. For example, with Yippee-ki-yay, I'd had an absolute blast with the show, but that being musical theatre, it wasn't my natural home, and I actually felt a bit of relief when it was over. The Welkin last year came to an abrupt halt, and I felt devastated that all our hard work had almost come to nothing, but that was different as we didn't get to complete our run. And before that, The Girl on the Train, that was a lot of fun, but the heavy workload of touring with an over-cumbersome set meant I was shattered when that one finished, and to be honest, was sick to the back teeth of loading the set into vans. Anyway, the post-show blues have gone now, and I'm straight on to the next show, for which we're a few rehearsals deep. Now, in case you haven't heard me mention it, it's called The Last Quiz Night on Earth, and it's by Alison Carr. And it's a kind of semi-immersive pub quiz slash comedy play. It's being staged by Rackheath Players, and it'll be on from the 8th to the 10th of June. Audiences get to play along with the quiz while the drama unfolds around them. And it's very funny, and we've got a great cast of four in this one, of which I make up 25%. I'll let you know how that's coming along in future episodes, but if you do want to book tickets for that now, tickets are available via rackheathplayers.co.uk. But enough about me. What about you? What have you been up to? Do let me know on my social media channels if there's anything interesting you've seen or involved in, as it's always great to hear from you, and it's also useful for me to keep my finger on the pulse of what's happening across the region. Anyway, let's move on to section two now, the main feature, and I'd like to introduce you to the co-artistic directors of a Suffolk-based company called Bring Out Your Dead Theatre, who are soon to open their original production at the Bury St Edmunds Guildhall. Their names are Greg Hansen and Hattie Ashton, and their latest show is a production called Forewarned, Forearmed, which opens in a couple of weeks' time. So, without further ado, let's have a chat with them, shall we? Hi there, Greg and Hattie. Now, I notoriously never ever bother with small talk because, of course, you know, I could ask you how your day is, but what relevance does, you know, have to someone that might be listening to this podcast in a couple of weeks' time? So whilst it may appear rude, let's just get straight into it. Firstly, the name Bring Out Your Dead, is that a reference to Monty Python?
Yes, it is, right, Greg?
I really wish there was some sort of deep, meaningful lore and mythos behind the name. But the truth of it is we were about to go into a meeting and we had 10 minutes to come up with a name, and we sort of spitballed a bunch of ideas and we picked the one that made us laugh, which is kind of how we do things. And we spitball a bunch of ideas, pick the thing that makes us laugh.
And also we do a lot of history stuff. So it's like bringing that history back from the dead, maybe.
Are you just forming a tenuous link on the spot there?
Well, it's a tenuous link I formed in my head some time ago, but I don't think I've ever said it out loud. Yeah.
it has become this name that sort of represents everything we do. So we've got the sort of silly Monty Python comedy link, which is very much our bag, the history link, the slightly morbid curiosity. We've done a few horror shows in the past. So it kind of encompasses everything that we really love.
Okay, well, now that's semi-cleared up. Can you give us a proper introduction to the company and what you're all about?
We're Bring Out Your Dead. We are a Bury St Edmunds-based theatre company. We've been going for 10 years now. We have done a range of things in that time, but our specialty now really is shows that are based on local history predominantly as kind of a leaping off point. But we try and steer away from museum kind of theatre and bring something innovative and particularly funny, comical. We like to be silly. We've got very stupid senses of humor, and we like to sort of fuse that with the history that we find, because we particularly like finding the weird and wonderful history that people don't often think about or read about or learn about in school.
And the show that you're presenting this Easter, Forewarned, Forearmed, which I'm surprised I got that in the first take, because every time I'd read it out loud I kind of went Forewarned, Forearmed. Messed it up every time, but
yeah, it's even worse. There's a part in the play when, is it Latin, Greg? Is it Latin?
We have to do it in Latin as well.
Yeah, and I always pray munitus, but I always go a bit
Suffolk. That's the first time you've got it right. First
there
time,
we go. I always go pray munitus. You do your bit, Greg.
Pray munitus.
Pray munitus,
which is forewarned, forearmed in Latin.
Okay. Yeah, it's the posh bit.
So now we've got the title out of the way.
Yeah.
In a rather shambolic manner. Can you give us an outline of the show?
Forewarned, Forearmed, it's basically, it is the story of World War II from beginning to end. So from just before the outbreak of the war in September 1939 to just after the end of the war in 1945. But it's told from a perspective that I don't think you've ever will really have seen it told, which is that of the Observer Corps. This was a civilian group that was set up. They were part of the integrated air defense system, and their job was to get a pair of binoculars. They were stationed all around the country. They'd look up in the sky, and when they saw Germans coming, they'd get on the blower, report it back to the group control center. They'd report it back to the sector command, and they'd report it back to fighter command. And then within minutes, fighters and bombers would be scrambled to meet the Germans, and that would blow the Germans' minds, because they thought they were, you know, being sneaky and getting in there, and they were going to get a raid on the UK, and we'd smash them. And it was such an integral part of our success in the Battle of Britain, but also throughout the entire war, really, as part of just defending this country. And they were all volunteers. They were all local volunteers who we've been, you know, reading about, researching about over the past, well, it's over a year now we've been working on this story to uncover those individual lives and find a way to bring them onto the stage.
And it strikes me as a fascinating premise. I guess it must have struck you as that to bother to write it, of course. But how much of the content of the piece is based on genuine recollections of members of Corps 14, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Corps group, 14 group. Yeah. Yeah. All of it, I think.
Yeah.
And because they were such characters, and also some people, not many now, obviously, because time's ticking, but there are people alive who remember these people. So that's been really wonderful. We're hoping to expand the project in the future. And if we get the funding for that, we will, of course, hunt down all of these people and record all of their recollections so we can put them to good use. But luckily, some of my family know them. So I ask my dad, and he tells me about Cyril Croger, the fishmonger, and how fabulous he was. And it's all, it's very local. And it's still the history. There are strings of the history still floating about. But we want to grab them before they disappear and let people know about these amazing people that existed on our doorstep.
And I gather that the venue you're performing at, the Bury St Edmunds Guildhall, is of significance to the play.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's right. It was... it was the headquarters for 14 group. That was where they were stationed, and that's it's through the Guildhall that we've become involved in the story. They approached us last year, and they were doing a exhibition about their World War II history, and they sort of said to us, they said, we want a lecture about this, but not a lecture, we want something fun. So we said, okay, well, we do fun, we don't do lectures.
We can
work that out. Yeah, so they just gave us all this sort of primary source material. It was sort of letters, diary entries, newspaper clippings, and all that kind of stuff. And we basically came up with a kind of letters live kind of thing. So it was all script in hand, and just a canter through World War II from the point of view of these people. And then what we've done this year is, like Hattie says, we're looking to sort of continually iterate on it, basically. And so this year it's still a two-hander, but we're off book, and we've sort of delve deeper into those individual characters. We've added more jokes because we can't help ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of growing and growing, and we're sort of getting more and more to the people who this play is about, because that's really what we want to get to. We want to get to who these people were and their stories, which are so sort of fascinating and honourable. You know, what a great thing that they did for our country, and what little recognition they get for it. And yeah, it's great to be in the building where it all happened.
I guess from the Guildhall's perspective, it's obviously the idea is to attract a few more people through the door as well to explore the history. And just going back a step, because I'm very, very nonsensical in my order, I understand from that there's more to it than just a play with this. You've got a workshop that people can join in with prior to the matinee, I believe.
Yeah, no, we do. So this year, again, we always try and expand things. So we've previously done projects. Our last big project that we did was about the East Anglian witch trials. And through that, we did a lot of, we got a lot of Heritage Lottery Fund money, and made it a really big project where we had lots of people participating. And we try and integrate participation into everything that we do, so we can engage people in lots of different ways with their history. And it is their history, obviously, because it's local history that we're focusing on. So We've got a workshop. It's thanks to support from the district council and from the town council. It's a free workshop for children aged 8 to 14. It's pre-show, so we've got a free family matinee. So anybody who's got an adult and a child in their party can come along to this free matinee at 2 o'clock on Friday the 14th. And before the show, if they want to, from 10 o'clock, Hattie and I will be running a workshop where, through all sorts of games and activities, we'll teach the kids about World War II, about the Observer Corps and the things that they did. And then at the end, they'll get a free lunch courtesy of a lovely tea room called Bailey's 2, who are catering the workshop for us. And then we'll skedaddle off and whack our Observer Corps uniforms on and come back and do a show for them.
You mentioned about your company history has a clear focus on telling stories from, you know, locally, as in Suffolk and parts of East Anglia as well. Do you currently have any more local tales in the pipeline for future productions?
I think this is our main focus, as when we did the kind of the lectures last year, it was, the response was really fantastic. So we're just like, oh my goodness, we must pursue this. So we're currently setting out a plan of how we can expand it, what's the most attractive to funders, and also how we can get the best out of it for everybody. So putting in a huge bid to turn this into like maybe singing or dancing, not too much dancing, for next year, or the year after, as these things sometimes take a lot of time. But have we got anything else on, Greg? Oh, we can't remember. We've got anything else on the go. Dragons?
I think Hattie's right. This is sort of our main focus. We are involved with Westow Village, where we are the entertainment provider for their annual Dragon Fest. So every year for them, we come up with a new little sort of outdoor entertainment for them about dragons. Last year we were dragon keepers, doing their health and safety talk for everybody who entered the park, so they knew how to behave themselves around dragons. And we've got to come up with something new for that this year. I mean, we're always discovering weird bits. So that's the great thing, as you probably know, about the region, is that there's lots of history around here, and a lot of it is mad. And we were forever coming across those little mad bits of history, and we go, oh, that's interesting. I really want to focus on that. I would really love to do a show about a guy called Roland the Farter, who was a professional farter. He went around farting to entertain people, and he was paid for it. He isn't local, unfortunately, which makes him maybe slightly outside of our remit, but I'm sure we can find a way to get him in there. So yeah, that's one day, Roland the Farter, the musical.
Maybe a kid's show, maybe. Or maybe not.
Maybe, definitely.
Lots of people love a fart gag. Yeah.
Well, you know, everyone's got to have a dream. You know?
Yeah.
And from other people's histories onto your own histories. Do you like that little segue there?
Lovely.
As you mentioned earlier, you formed Bring Out Your Dead in 2014. What was the rationale behind forming your own company?
I think we met through performing of the local Theatre Royal Writers Group. And I think we were two young people who didn't have many other arty farties our age in our periphery. And we were like, we'd like some opportunities. So let's make some. So let's do it. Let's do that mad thing and jump right in. And I think that's how it all kicked off.
Yeah. Sort of just before we set it up, I'd done a year at the Theatre Royal in Bury. They ran a what they called a young associates program, and there was a cohort of five of us, and you know, we'd come in and sort of do a bit of admin support, a bit of photocopying, answering the phones, that sort of thing, helping out with the youth theatre groups, and in return they were able to sort of provide us access to resources to work on our own projects and make our own things. So you know, we did something about the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. Then sort of Hats and I got to the end of it, and we were like, cool, we want to keep doing this. That was fun, and I think we sort of felt like it was hairy, but we were good at it. So you know, let's keep going and let's get better at it and less hairy.
And I think the others had gone. They'd possibly like got into drama schools and courses, and we hadn't, alas. Yeah, so we were like, right, well, let's make some lemonade.
Now, take a step back prior to Bring Out Your Dead. Where did it all start? Where did the love of performing arts start for you guys?
So for me, I'm riddled with dyslexia, and I couldn't read until I was 11, and I was rubbish at everything until I went to a special dyslexic school called the Old Rectory in Brettenham. I think it's got a posh different name now. And it's there I kind of really was given the opportunity and encouraged to explore drama. And I was quite good. And I was good at something. So I was a bit like, right, there you go. That's me for life. And so on from there, went and did internships and whatnot at the Theatre Royal locally. And then while I was there, I thought, oh, I'll go to clown school. So I went to clown school in France at École Philippe Gollier. And then I did the foundation course at RADA, which was wonderful. And it was at RADA, actually, that I kind of had an epiphany that, it's quite sad, but I was like, oh, I'm not an idiot. I can read. Of course, I could read by then, but I have all these hang-ups and you beat yourself up and you've got that evil third eye. But it really woke me up to my achievements and that what I was capable of. And it then enabled me to actually be like, right, well, I can do this, so I'm going to do it. And I am going to explore history because actually I love history because I'm fascinated by it. And kind of that's my little adventure through it, yeah. And now, aside from this, I'm now a clown doctor as well. So I'm medical. So I've, the family are pleased. But yeah, so that's me.
Is that a specialism for tending to clowns or?
Oh, no, not yet. So it's going on to children's wards. It's with Suffolk Art Link. And we're a group called Clown Round, and we go on to children's wards at Norwich and Norfolk Hospital, James Paget, Colchester and Ipswich, hopefully some other ones as the project grows. And we just take the edge off, change the atmosphere. And it's wonderful because it's obviously it's for the children, it's for their families who are around them during this really stressful, vulnerable time. But it's also for the staff, and it really changes the atmosphere and award. And in other countries there's a lot of backing behind clown doctors because it's scientifically proven that it improves people's healing and everyone's mental health and makes things easier for the doctors and stuff like that. So I'm really thrilled to be doing that on the side. Yeah,
that sounds really cool. I haven't come across that.
I have to tell you my doctor name. My clown doctor name is I'm Dr. Plop. So, yeah, I'm really chuffed with that.
How about you, Greg?
So I was not, I think I was probably creative as a child in the sense that, you know, we would always go out and play, even when we had mobile phones, you know, we didn't sort of use them very much. They were a device for our parents to call us and say, you've got to come back for tea now. We played outside, just made up, kind of like role played, you know, sort of like almost Dungeons and Dragons kind of thing. But I didn't really, I didn't have any conception of theatre. I was, as a young child, I was really scared of panto. I used to hate it. My nan would book us seats on the front row and I'd scream the house down and then they'd have to take me out by the interval. Now it's like my favourite thing. Panto is my favourite thing. It's disgusting, really. I can't shut up about it. But when I was about 13, I think my nan was into amateur dramatics and we went to see her do a play called Tiptoe Through the Tombstones, which in hindsight is as dreadful as it sounds, but I thought it was the best thing ever. About 2 weeks later, my mum had to go around our housing estate tearing down signs that I had put up around on the lampposts advertising for auditions for a production of Tiptoe Through the Tombstones, and had to get my nan to call me and explain that you can't just do a play like that. But as soon as my mum saw in the paper they were advertising for a new youth theatre that the Theatre Royal had set up, she was like, ah, this will shut him up, this will be his outlet for that. So she signed me up and I was away with that. And it was, you know, the sort of first couple of terms, it was just the joy of socializing with people and playing games and that kind of thing. And then we did our first play, which was nothing particularly special. It was sort of Grimm's fairy tales or something. And I was the king in Rapunzel. And I remember basically my only line was to go on about three or four times and tell Rapunzel that if she didn't spin me a ball of wool, I was going to cut her head off. And I just remember going out on stage and people really finding it funny, really roaring with laughter whenever I said it. And it never occurred to me that it was going to be funny. I just thought, well, I'm the king and that's how I'd say it. And I was like, this is amazing. this is brilliant. And I think that's kind of when the bug sort of set in, the performing bug, and the particularly making people laugh. So I did loads of stuff with the theatre, Royal Youth Theatre after that, and then sort of started branching out. I did some when Spinning Wheel Theatre, who were local to us when they were set up, they did a load of participatory work that I did with them. That's where I really got my grounding in sort of the business of how to do theatre, the business of doing theatre, because they're just super hot at that and brilliantly wise and wonderful when it comes to that that side of things. And, you know, their shows are terrific as well. And I started working for the Theatre Royal in Bury. I did 10 years in the box office. And through that, I got involved in some of the sort of my first professional gigs were the rehearsed readings that they did of the old Georgian plays back after they'd had the restoration. That's kind of like doing your, I mean, not as grand, but it was kind of like being spear carrier at the RSC. You know, you just get to stand at the back of the stage and have the odd line and watch all these brilliant actors just tear up the stage with all this wonderful comedy. So that was fantastic. And then, yeah, just from there, you know, you sort of grow, you contact some people, see you and offer you jobs here, there and yon. And then Hattie and I met through the writers group and did the Young Associates program and decided, right, we need a theatre baby of our own. And here we are.
Fantastic. And you've kind of hinted really with the clowning around and enjoying making people laugh, that is that very much what kind of drives you, or is there a serious side to you guys as well?
I'm a very good stage crier, so there's a serious side. but I much prefer the comedy, and we're very much kindred spirits in that, and we bounce off each other really well. And luckily it turns out we do write funny things. People laugh at our stuff, which is amazing. And I think it's what we love and it's what really engages us. And I think you've got to do what you know and you've got to do what you love, because then, you know, that's true to you and people will come.
Yeah, it's a lesson we kind of, I think we learned late in a way, and because we've always enjoyed making each other laugh and we've always enjoyed making other people laugh. I mean, obviously, you know, Hattie goes off to clown school and spends all that time making people laugh. And, you know, she's fabulously funny on and off stage. But it didn't sort of come into our own work until recently, the work we're producing together. You know, the first four shows that we did, first three shows we did, the first two were adaptations of horror stories, Edgar Allan Poe and H.P. Lovecraft, so very serious, very scary. And I think there's a link between horror and comedy in terms of sort of building and releasing tension, but it wasn't funny.
No, it was not funny. We did not make that link.
No. and then our third show, which was the big one about the East Anglian witch trials, I think our intention was to actually do a comedy play about witch trials, a sort of a horrible histories kind of thing. That was the ambition. But when we got into the history and we sort of hooked up with a really wonderful historian, Malcolm Gaskill, who sort of wrote the book on the East Anglian witch trials, we sort of just got so taken away by you know, what was essentially well, it's a war story really when you get into it, that the witch trials, you know, it took place right in the middle of the Civil War, one of the bloodiest wars that the country's ever been involved in, and so we produced this great big folk musical that I think had maybe one joke in it, and was otherwise incredibly dark and bleak and serious.
But
dark, bleak and serious doesn't have to be bad.
No, exactly. Yeah.
our venue was so worried. We did a 2-week run and they were so worried that they wouldn't sell out one show, and we sold out every show for 2 weeks.
And I joked a little bit before about Rowan the Farter, was it?
Roland the Farter.
Yeah. Roland the Farter, yeah. About that being the dream. But what is the dream for you guys? What's the height of ambition for Bring Out Your Dead?
It would be lovely to get something really properly funded, hire a crack team of local creatives, lots of whom we know, but obviously we can't work with them because there's no money. And it'd be lovely to be able to pay everyone properly to do something we really believed in and loved, and that, of course, audiences loved. But I think there's a soft spot in my heart, certainly, for local history. Yeah, just something that everyone enjoyed the experience and the ride. And got some nice reviews. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
And finally, before we wrap things up, can you remind us? I don't think we've actually talked about dates. We know where we can catch Forewarned, Forearmed, but when?
So we have two public shows on the evenings of Thursday the 13th and Friday the 14th of April, 7 p.m. starts. And we have the free matinee performance for families. So you must have at least one adult and one child under the age of 16 in your party at 2 p.m. And if you've got a child 8 to 14 who wants to join in a workshop from 10 a.m. on that day as well, then you can book them on when you book your ticket for the matinee.
Fantastic. I think that nicely covers.
Would you like to know where to get the tickets from? Sorry, I should probably mention that. So you can get them over the phone from the lovely people at the Apex in Bury St Edmunds. Their number is 01284 758 000. That's 01284 758 000. Or you can get them online from whatsonwestsuffolk.co.uk. And yeah, you must, if you want to book for the workshop, you must book a ticket to see the matinee. And I would recommend booking really quickly because tickets are limited and selling very fast.
Hooray!
Excellent. All right then, guys. Well, thanks very much and good luck with the shows. So there we have it. That was the lovely Greg and Hattie from Bring Out Your Dead Theatre. Now, if you want to catch their enthralling-sounding production of Forewarned, Forearmed on either the 13th or 14th of April, or you want to book a place at the Three Family Matinee or workshop on the 14th, visit whatsonwestsuffolk.co.uk for details. You can, of course, follow Bring Out Your Dead Theatre on Facebook and Instagram, where they'll no doubt have booking details too. Now, what else is coming up in the region over the coming weeks? Well, also in Bury St Edmunds, but a couple of weeks later, the Bury St Edmunds Operatic and Dramatic Society are opening their production of the stage adaptation of the romantic comedy Shakespeare in Love. It's on between the 25th and 29th of April at the Theatre Royal in Bury, with tickets available via theatreroyal.org. Over in Cambridge, Boards is presenting a production called Night of January 16th. It's an intriguing courtroom drama where members of the audience who have been selected to act as the jury decide the verdict in the trial of Karen Andre, who's charged with the murder of her employer. It's on at the ADC Theatre in Cambridge between the 25th and 29th of April, and tickets can be purchased via adctheatre.com. And finally, back in Norfolk, Sheringham Little Youth Theatre is bringing The Jungle Book to the stage. Now, it's a show that needs no introduction, being based on the Rudyard Kipling book and the Disney film of the same name. And it, of course, features those fantastically memorable songs from the movie The Bare Necessities and I Wanna Be Like You. Now, if you want to show some support for the next generation, get yourself over to Sheringham Little Theatre between the 13th and 15th of April. The shows start at 6 p.m. and there's a 2 p.m. matinee on the Saturday too. Tickets for that are available via sheringhamlittletheatre.com. And that, folks, is all I have time for. As usual, I post links for the shows mentioned on my social media accounts throughout the next couple of weeks. Do get in touch if you want a shout out or you want to be featured as a guest. And most of all, thanks for listening to me, Greg and Hattie ramble on. Your support is much appreciated as always. In the meantime, take care of yourselves and go watch some theatre. Bye.